This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb from Cote, Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming a designer who, when her name is mentioned, people usually say the word icon, Mary Douglas Drysdale. So Mary, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
And thank you very much for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. And as we do with all of our guests, we're always fascinated to know how people of all career levels of accomplishment have, you know, where you came from and how you got to where you are now. So love to hear about your background.
Well, sure. I'm absolutely a Southern girl. I was born and raised in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I think that that is where I first fell in love with design. My mother had an extraordinary rock garden. And she, in her rock garden, she also had amazing flowers of all sorts and beautiful colors. And in fact, she was always a little disappointed with me that I wouldn't work with her in the flower patch because I was always building tree houses and forts. So, and I'm very proud to say that by the age of 8, I had built a fort which had a roof that did not leak.
That's an accomplishment.
And I think that the desire to build really probably came because my father loved to renovate our houses. I think he thought secretly that, you know, he had the skill and ability of Thomas Jefferson, and we were living in the shadow of Monticello. So I became very comfortable around construction sites, and I realized that building spaces and then making them beautiful was something I could do well and loved.
Did you go to school for design, or?
Yeah, I did, actually. After the years in Charlottesville, my family came to Washington under the Kennedy administration. And then at some point, I guess, I decided that I was old enough to move to Paris and went there for 3 years and took classes at the École des Beaux-Arts and the École des Sciences Politiques. And during that time, I had really planned my own grand tour of Europe. Every 3 months, I would go to some remarkable building or chateau or castle in another city and really study the buildings. When I came back to the United States, I came back to Washington and went to Mount Vernon School of Design, which was, after my European experience, something of a disappointment. So I then went to the Parsons School of Design and subsequently took a tutorial with Hans Krogh, who was an industrial designer. And I don't think we ever stop learning in this field. Certainly, I constantly surround myself with books and read, but that's my formal background.
Did you immediately get out of school and open up a business and get going, or did you start doing projects when you were still in school, which led to a client list?
You know, I think that when I finished school, I did start a very small business. And in retrospect, you know, I might have had better judgment if I had worked for some others for some period of time. But I think I had tremendous self-confidence, and I guess from the beginning, the projects were, you know, small, but very successful. And then I liked working for myself, and I've continued to do so.
You know, many designers are never really lucky enough to be quite as popular as you've been and as published as you've been. And you also developed a trademark in the last decade. And it was all white with a very bright yellow accent. And I was just wondering, how did that whole look come about? I mean, it really became like your trademark for a few years. I think everyone that saw, maybe it was your home originally was done that way. And then a few other people would say, I want that white look with that bright accent of yellow. It was really strikingly gorgeous. And you always use these classic, like, antiques mixed in with gold. I mean, you were really ahead of your time.
Well, that's a funny story, Joni, because actually at about that time I actually started out as a modernist and then sort of became disenchanted and was exploring, you know, much more decorative work. And I had been accused of being too white. All of my rooms were white. And so I had the occasion to do a show house for the National Symphony Orchestra show house. And in that room, I thought I would be really daring and use these curtains, which were yellow plaid and really a sharp yellow, and I thought them quite beautiful. And so I then put them in my house because it seemed like a reasonable thing to do. And then I actually decided that I would build the rest of my house around those curtains. They were so nice.
I know those curtains.
And I was lucky enough to have a fabulous story in Veranda magazine, which featured them prominently. And then I think for the next few years after that, anyone in the United States who wanted to do a yellow and white room called me. And so I actually do work with other colors, but
How do you handle that to get so, you know, to have such a wonderful, beautiful look and then everyone wants to copy it, you know? I mean, how do you handle that as a designer? Do you tell people, no, I'm done with that and, you know, I want to move on, or do you just do it for your client?
Well, I think that I'm always sort of moving on. I mean, I think that there's a... to stay sort of alive and fresh and involved with your work, you always have to be reinventing what you're doing. So if I had a client who wanted to do a yellow and white room, I certainly would. But as a designer, I'm very interested in exploring all kinds of things. I don't want to just have one room type that I do. In fact, one of the things that I think that is most interesting to me in looking back over my work is the real diversity from, log cabins to French Revival houses to farmhouses and these neoclassical townhouses.
Well, I saw on your Facebook that, I guess it's your farmhouse.
Yes.
It's like predominantly in orange. Are you into orange?
I love that.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I loved that house so much. I was there for horses, but it was an 1824 stone house that had just been totally derelict. And I tried to bring it back with, you know, old floors and, new old plaster. And it's really just the kitchen that's orange. I mean, I was inspired by a pumpkin in my farmer neighbor's field, and I tried to copy that color. But I also wanted to sort of be sensitive to these great quilts that these women make. And the colors are so strong. You know, for women who are quiet in society and wear black, they make the most remarkable and evocative quilts of all colors. So it was a combination of quilts and the pumpkins. But it's just the kitchen. You know, there's green upstairs and red on the floor above that. But I do like orange.
Well, I notice you do paint a lot of your floors, which I think is great because so many people are afraid of touching a wood floor.
I paint everything. I mean, you know, just even the softest glaze. And one of the reasons for that is, well, on walls is because today's paints don't have as much pigment. And even if I'm doing a white wall, I'll probably glaze it just a striée so that there's just a hair of difference, you know, between the colors. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just to give it a little bit more depth, you know, that sort of come-and-go feeling that is exciting when you look at a wall. Floors, I actually will glaze lightly because I love the color of raw wood. And, you know, this whole idea of staining floors is a 19th century convention. And oftentimes floors that are stained, you know, take on very, to my view, very artificial colors. So in a place like the country, where when the house was really made, the way people lived with those floors, they didn't stain them. You know, they left them natural. So I try and pick solutions. I hope to pick solutions that are appropriate for the building.
You talked about how in the beginning your style was initially very maybe Spartan and white and contemporary or sort of modern. Would you ever do that sort of juxtaposition of an interior that's like that, possibly in an old farmhouse?
Well, I think that when I started out, I might have even described myself as a minimalist. I think that in a farmhouse, what I do is, for me, my belief is I like to see projects as complete and whole as possible. Typically, I will do the architectural interiors or the architecture work and the decoration. So in a farmhouse, if it were going to be very spare, I mean, I could see that, but I would keep the building itself consistent with the original architectural design intent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I answered your question. I can see that I tend to, actually, I think of myself as a traditionalist with a modern sensibility. You know, I'm that place where past meets present.
Well, do you think that that's a result of the training in Europe? Because that seems to me a very European sensibility of the very old buildings, that they don't just gut these buildings and turn them into modern empty boxes. They, you know, have beautiful architecture with sometimes extremely modern furnishings and lighting.
You're absolutely right, Linda, and it does come from that. You know, it comes from those years of being in France and looking at all those buildings and understanding that preserving them is part of our, you know, is part of our history. We have a lot to learn, and it's also sort of environmentally correct. But it doesn't also mean that one can't have modern expression. I mean, the whole question of what's modern now, you know, is out there. People trying to define it. Modernism as an aesthetic strong force isn't as muscular as it once was, but people all want to live modern lives at some level.
Mm-hmm.
We just also want to stay connected to the past and respect our traditions. I think also that, you know, that's particularly a Southern thing. You know, when I think of New York, for example, in the big city, I think of New York is being more of an apartment city. And Southerners were always, never wanted to leave their houses. And so therefore, there wasn't as much modernist building. And the feeling and the appreciation for trims and columns and baseboards and articulated floors never really left the Southern vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true of north of New York as well. Being from Massachusetts. It's,
Boston.
Yes. You know, farther north than New York City. I mean, we have the same sensibility. We have the old buildings and you know, they have value that you can't replace.
Well, I think that that's really very much where we are now. I mean, I think that we're at the nexus of the waning of the modernist era and the importance of the historic preservation movement, which has had a tremendous impact, and now sustainability. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I think of modernism, I don't just think of the aesthetics. I also think of the engineering and everything that modernism brought. I think that we all want to have engineered houses. We all want to have smart houses, great kitchens, great bathrooms, you know, heated floors,
yeah.
computers that work. Skype. Yeah, but we also want to feel comfortable. You know, I think about houses and history very much the way I think about T.S. Eliot's essay on tradition and the individual talent. You know, what we know, frankly, we learned from those who preceded us. And just as we have grandparents and uncles that we may not like, but, you know, it's really a family of history and buildings that I think are important to keep and maintain. New buildings, I mean, if you're starting from scratch, terrific, build a totally modern building. I just don't think that we should be tearing our old buildings down.
That I agree with. What about, do you do much work out on the West Coast?
No, I love California. I'd love to work in California. I've worked in Chicago, in Maine, in Cape Cod, Boston, New York, the Carolinas, and Florida, but not California yet.
And what? Tell me about what your office. How many people do you have on staff?
I have a small staff. I have 4 people that work with me, and we don't do a tremendous number of projects at a time. I think that I have probably 7 projects going on right now. And a lot of the projects that we do are also for repeat clients. So, you know, I really know these people and what they want. And also, my biggest interest right now is working on a book. I've been working on a book for the last
year. I was wondering when you were going to compile all your work into design book.
Well, it's interesting. A few years back, I did something for, I guess, Robert Allen, and I went for 2 years from showroom to showroom, and I was making presentations in different cities. And, I just thought it was a good experience for me. And then at every design center, people were asking me, well, when is the book coming out?
Mm-hmm.
And they were reminding me of stories and projects, which, of course, I did remember when they mentioned them to me. But I was astounded, frankly, that, you know, some of these projects went back 10 or 15 years, that, you know, the people really remembered them.
Well, because I think people keep the magazines, you know, the great magazines, and they look back, and I certainly remember there was a dining room with, I think it was the yellow and the white, and there was like a cinoiserie wallpaper.
Yes.
Love that. I mean, that was in my clipping file for you. It probably is still in there. But yeah, I mean, you would have a great book because you've been pretty busy.
Absolutely. I've done probably over 500 projects, and I've had in my publications, I've been lucky enough to have been published many times. I think I've had 64 career covers. I'm probably in about, 50 books.
You have an 11-page CV just filled with.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, but the best work is still to come, you know. I think that I'm just warming up.
So the book, what stage is it in right now?
The book, I'm working with a fabulous, absolutely fabulous book designer. And it's been the last year and a half I've spent on sort of formulating the idea, getting the rights to all of the film, putting a story together, and right now, and we have talked to 3 different publishers and have gotten 3 very good responses. So I think we're close to the final stages of a deal, and I'm very excited about it.
That is exciting.
I think that, you know, I mean, when I went to look at all of the pictures that I have something like 950 transparencies. And I have 4 more projects to photograph this summer for the book. And, you know, there's going to be a great deal of diversity, you know, from a log cabin to an 1824 stone farmhouse to a revival mansion, which is one of the most prominent, most elegant river houses in Washington, to, you know, a Park Avenue apartment and a Beaux-Art mansion here, South Carolina waterfront property. You know, it's just, there have been a lot of projects that I've done, and I think that there's a wonderful combination, I hope, that people will see that combines a sense of history, the past, and living a modern life. I think that art is an important part of making these projects feel up to date. Also, my use of color is sometimes, outside the box a little bit. So it's interesting. I think the there are many projects which are very interesting just from the perspective of color.
You know, I was going to ask you about art. When you do you buy the art for your clients? Do you work with them? What is your take on art collection as far as using art in the space that you've designed?
Well, I've always felt that a complete project was really a combination of art, architecture, and decoration. And that is, those are the elements which would can make the most complete and rich interior. So I have a couple of art consultants that I've worked with probably for 25 years. And I introduce them to my clients. And then, you know, we work together to choose the right pieces and to make the right selections to curate all of the rooms. I make sure that they work well in the spaces from the perspective of proportion and lighting. And I feel very lucky that I have the talent and the confidence in, to work with this other, I should say her talent, work with this other person who's a great art consultant. But most of my clients are very interested in acquiring.
Considering that you try to keep your spaces correct historically, do you bring in modern art? Do you bring in a Frank Stella sculpture, for instance, in a very traditional home?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I myself love traditional architecture, but architecture and decoration are related but two different things. And I love old pieces and antiques, but I think that just the clients that I work for want to be connected to the past. They want to feel like they feel the history of their buildings. But they also want to feel very much connected to what's fresh and new and now. And so I think the contemporary art works well. I mean, it's, again, a very French device. You know, you often see in these really remarkable estates and chateaux and appartements, you know, very traditional detailing, 19th century buildings, 18th century buildings, and contemporary art. I mean, I think it's just saying, yes, we love these old buildings, but we also appreciate the time in which we live.
It's not a museum-like recreation of days gone by.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, because I tend to, and this is just my own personal feeling, I feel that when people collect art, they should collect what they love. And I love seeing a space that is everything that you've been describing, but then I love seeing an art collection that's varied, that, you know, mm-hmm. runs everything from 20th century to, you know, 18th century.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think you put it very, very well. You should never buy anything that you don't love. I mean, you know, unless it's just an investment, if you're buying it for investment and it's a great investment, everything that you have in your house, you should love. I think that that's what's one of the things that's going to make you comfortable. There are too many things that we all see, and you want your house to be special. I mean, I think that creating a house for an individual, it must be memorable. When you enter your house, you're in your room, it has to be very, very special. So if you don't love the things that are in it, you know, it's not likely to happen. I don't ever get anything that I don't love.
Mary, in so many of your houses, you know, you have gorgeous antiques, like almost period antiques and really fine. Do you yourself go procure those? I mean, do you go shop in France for your clients or how does that come about?
You know, I'll tell you, I think it's, I am a major advocate of buying at auction. I have been buying at Sotheby's and Christie's for 25 years. And I think that it's a way to see in a very short period of time the best of what's on the market. It is a way to get enormous value because buying at auction is considerably less than buying at retail. And, you know, it's really a way to educate your clients, too, because they can see so many pieces at once. So, yes, I pretty much pick out everything that my clients have. Occasionally, you know, they'll be in France or a foreign country, and they'll say, oh, what about this? And then they'll send me pictures, and I'll say, well, it works or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
If you're starting a project from scratch, say someone's vacation house, that kind of thing, does the art come first? I mean, you know, you're either building a new house or you're taking an existing structure. You obviously have to plan for the art because you have to plan for the lighting.
Right.
So how do you work that process?
Okay, well, let's just say that if these people have, you know, they don't have art, they don't have furniture, they have, you know, we're starting from scratch. I would say, you know, plan is generator. I would do a schematic of the furniture. I would understand where the major areas of emphasis or focus should be. And once that sort of diagram was completed, then I would say, I think we should have a, you know, I think we should have a major piece here. I think we should have smaller pieces here. Another important piece there. And so I like to place the art in places where, which are prominent, and in places where obviously the art will be well framed and seen. But art is something that I don't think you just go out. It's not exactly the same thing as buying sheets.
Right.
You know, you have to, you know, I think you have to educate yourself to make sure that you're getting something that you like. And that's part of the fun of doing these projects, is that people really begin to understand levels of their taste that they didn't quite connect to before.
Who do you consider, do you have any mentors, or are there any designers living or you know, old, you know, deceased that you consider?
That was funny. Are there any living designers who inspire you? And actually, I will say that many of the designers who inspire me are no longer with us. But
well, that's what I figured.
No. I will say that there are so many absolutely excellent people working today. I mean, it's just hard to mention them all. But I, you know, Thomas Jefferson, clearly. I mean, I think he was a man who was both a classicist and totally idiosyncratic. Le Nôtre. Let's see. I think that Ferguson and Chimamian, John Saladino. There are so many people to mention. It's just hard to, you know.
I love Saladino. He's such a genius.
Well, Le Corbusier. I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright. Basically, the people I would say that I feel most akin with, that I really respect, although I respect many things about many people, are the people that I connect with are those people who see the projects in its totality. You know, I'm not saying that every interior designer should be able to build a house from scratch. No, I'm not saying that at all. But I do think that having an understanding of how to make the rooms and plan them, do paneling, lighting, you know, kitchen planning, bathroom planning, that sort of thing. Plus, you know, design or select the furniture, consult on the art, you know, all of the aspects that make a home. So I do appreciate those people who concern themselves with the whole, because I think that the best projects of all time in any era have always been complete. And in fact, I think that that's one of the things 2 years ago, one of the reasons why I'm so enchanted with the 18th century in America and Europe as well, is because there were fewer consultants. And so, you know, the man who built a house, even if it was from pattern books, sighted his house on the land after great consideration, decided on the elevations, picked the paneling patterns and the colors, worked with the rug makers, commissioned the portraits, picked the china. You know, there's sort of a very sublime and connected feeling to these projects, because there's one hand, you know, that, and one mind that is guiding the decisions. And that's what I like. I like that completeness.
Do you do pick the china for, I mean, do you go to that minute detail?
Oh, absolutely. I have even designed trash cans for my clients. You know, I think that, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that anything, I chose in the beginning, I started out doing commercial work. And, you know, that's very interesting. But I really enjoy working with people to make their lives, to make their dreams, their design dreams come true, to make their lives comfortable, to make them feel that they're in a very special place. So, yeah, if it means, you know, going out and, you know, buying teaspoons for them, monogramming their napkins, getting just the right pillow mix, whatever it is. I mean, it's very important, I mean, to me, not only to make the space pretty, but to make the people who live in that space feel at home. That's really the goal.
Now, you said that you have a lot of clients you've had for a while and you do new projects for them. When you're taking yes. on a new client, what is your process for getting to know them and sort of jumping off into the kind of abyss of a new, you know, new relationship and new design plan?
Well, I think it's, you know, I tend to be, I would probably describe myself as a rational romantic. So at the beginning of a project is definitely the rational time. You know, I'm trying to be very organized. I mean, I will go out to their house. I really try and talk to them about their, what their scope is, what their budget is, what it is that they want. We do a survey of the existing conditions. We photograph everything that might be used. I have a whole series of photographs from my portfolio and then some lovely books that I find helpful in showing potential clients or clients, new clients. And I get them to sort of respond to things visually. And then we also have a questionnaire. And the most amazing thing is that the answers that you get from the pictures are usually different than the answers that mm-hmm. you get from the questionnaire.
I know, it's amazing.
The guy who says, I can't stand green, always picks the green room.
Yeah.
I think that's what, somebody else told us that exact same thing.
Yeah,
we've
had this conversation with people. I hate flowers, and then they end up with
That said what?
They will say a specific thing that they dislike, color, or I don't like florals, or, you know, and then, you know, they're also asked to tear images, and those images always end up having those elements that they just described as not liking.
But, you know, this is process, and that's really what I like about the projects, is the getting there, because I think that some designers work and they talk to their clients and then they come back sometime later and they say, well, this is it. This is the scheme. Yeah, the walls are going to be this. The floor is going to be that. The chandelier will be here. These are all of your fabrics. And that's actually not the way I work. I really work in a collaborative way, I think, with the clients. And so there's always a proposal, a discussion, a consensus reached, redevelopment, additional design work, taking it to the next step, discussion, consensus, and then redevelopment. So the client is a very strong member of the design team.
How long do your processes normally take?
You know what? It really depends upon a number of things. Yeah, client, you're absolutely right. You know, some people are incredibly decisive and they just make up their minds, and other people are almost incapable.
And so what do you do in that point? I mean, do you hear people talk about, you know, oh, gosh, 6 weeks over, you know, we're looking at five different colors of beige, and it's been 6 weeks. We've got to move on. I mean, at that point, do you just step in and say, look, you hired me for a reason, and I'm going to have to make the decision here so we can get it going?
Well, you know, I think with each person it's different. But I think that my answer has to be that I do whatever it is. I think that when people can't make up their minds, there's really something else going on. You know, they're you know, they're afraid that they're going to make a mistake. They can't pre-visualize. Mm-hmm. There's something that's preventing them. I mean, they're not trying to be bad clients.
No.
But
that's why I think that some people need for the designer to say, you hired me for a reason, and, you know, so that you take the onus off of them and you say, there's a reason why you hired a professional to help you make that choice.
That's true. That's absolutely true. You do hire a professional to help you make that choice. And what I try and do is sometimes I'll do a maquette. Sometimes I'll have part of a wall painted. Sometimes I'll bring a piece of furniture in. Because ultimately, people who have a hard time making a decision, you know, then they sort of suffer until it's all done. So I really try and get them to relax and to understand that, you see, that decision wasn't so hard. Now let's go to the next one. Mm-hmm. And so I try and do everything I can to allow them to see. I mean, I have an ability to pre-visualize, which is amazing. So, like, we talk about it, it's almost done in my mind, you know. But I try and help people either through drawings or mock-ups or taking them someplace so that they can see something like it or looking at a magazine. I do whatever I can to get them to understand. And if they don't, I just wait till they leave town and I do what I want.
And they come back and they're like, that's exactly what I wanted all along.
Exactly.
Do you give your clients a choice of fabrics? Are you one of those designers? Or?
Well, you know, no, I think that in the beginning I show people what I would call palettes. All right. So the way I see design process is like a funnel. Okay. If you were to imagine a funnel, you'd say it's very wide at the top and then it gets to be very narrow at the bottom. Okay. So at the beginning of a process, I think that, you know, it's fine and you should look at a lot of different things to make sure you're going in the right direction. But after those first decisions are made, then you're committed to them. And so there's less room for discussion. So I'm actually much more interested in getting the front end agreement with a client. And then in terms of the details and the development and the actual placement of fabrics on specific pieces in order to achieve, you know, balance or interest, whatever we're going for, I take a stronger role in that. I mean, style is, I'm very interested to work in many different styles. And most of them may have to do with old buildings now, but I'm not a person who says, oh, gee, all of my rooms have to have white walls and yellow and white curtains, you know, and that's my signature. I was talking to a woman earlier today. She said, oh, my favorite color is navy blue. I would really want her to have a navy blue room.
Mm-hmm.
So I do. I consider, the other thing is that at the end of the process, I believe, at the end of the process, when you have involved your client a lot, you know, they feel like it's their house. And that's really what I want. I don't want them to feel like it's my house. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure that they're very proud and happy. And, you know, I have clients that hire me over and over again. And they want my talent and they want my ability and my drive and my absolute commitment to get it finished and to stick with them and all of that. But they want it to be their house. So I'm not sure how you can create a very personal and memorable space for someone if you don't allow them to make significant decisions.
Do you, when you're working with someone, so say you're working on their primary home and they're living there or they're kind of living mm-hmm. around it, do you have an installation like day and sort of hold everything and then do the ta-da, it's all here, or do you let things go in piecemeal?
Well, I think it's always wonderful when you can have those, you know, you have certain parts of the project or rooms that are installed in a few days or a day. And I think it's great when people can come home and say, yeah, it's done. And the flowers are on the table and, you know, the steaks in the oven or whatever, you know, here's the wine, the glass of wine. But sometimes my projects last, you know, a project that I finished recently was a 3.5-year project. So there were a lot of mini installations because it was really the renovation and decoration of a 16,000 square foot house. It was historic.
You don't load that all in one day.
You're right.
Not a lot of moving in.
But I do think it's, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful when you have that moment and you have made it very special and very personal and people can come home. But my projects tend to be probably bigger. And so it's harder to do that with, you know, big numbers of rooms.
You don't take on, do you ever take on a small project?
I do. You know, it's not the size of the project really that is interesting to me. It's the people. And it's also the problem itself. I mean, I'm doing this wonderful little log cabin in a log cabin addition in Marshall, Virginia, for a young couple. And it's just, you know, it's the most charming little house. And they're doing a lot of the work themselves. But I, you know, I'm intrigued by the fact that they are saving this log cabin and that it's in, you know, 50 acres of really gorgeous land. And then I can sort of make it, I can help them with this, some awkward transitions. So, it doesn't have to be a mansion. The people have to be serious about their project. They have to really want to get good things from it. You know, somebody called me up and they said, look, I have 2 days. Can you just, I've got a house that I want to, you know, that I want to sell. Could you put it together for me for 2 days? And I'm not even going to meet you. It'll just be on the telephone and do whatever you want. I mean, I might do it, but I don't think that's not my kind of project. Mm-hmm. I really like to think about things. I like it to be conscious. I like it to be excellent. I like it to be appropriate to the architectural type, to be innovative in and of itself, and to suit perfectly, or just suit as well as I'm able, the people who live there. And I want them to be happy and surprised and charmed, you know, every day as well. I mean, I have one couple that I've done 5 projects for, and, you know, they're talking about another, because after the first house I did for them, and they had had 3 houses designed before that, they said that they had never really understood what it was like to live in a house that had been designed for them.
Even though they'd had 3 houses designed for them.
Well, they'd had 3 houses designed.
But not for them.
But you know what I'm saying? There's a difference.
Yeah.
Between saying, oh, yes, 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 it has to be this way, and the door will be there and the table will be here. Mm-hmm. But that's not really very personal. Do you see what I'm saying?
I
think that when you take the time to dialogue with your client, to bring them into it, and by that I don't mean, you know, go shopping with them every afternoon,
mm-hmm.
but getting to know them, getting to know your client and recognizing that it's their house and not yours, you're making things, and in your decision making, you're making them to enhance the joy of living in their house. And I think the people, my clients, appreciate that. I mean, I was in tears, actually, frankly, candidly, though, when I completed my first house for them, and they said, well, we have to talk about a punch list. And then they said, well, there's something else we want to show you about 20 miles out of Washington. And I said, okay, well, fine, I'll go. And I went and I saw that it was another house. And I said, well, why are we looking at this house? You have a house in Washington. And they said what they said. Well, we never had known before what it was like to have a house really designed for us. Now we want to have that here too. Because the other house was in Maine. So I think it makes a difference. It makes a real...
Well, and it's just an enormous compliment to, you know, it just shows that you're sitting, I mean, a lot of people will talk about designing and considering how the client lives, but it's clear that you really are able to have this sort of perceptive conversation or relationship with these clients so that you do pull out of them maybe sometimes what they can't even define themselves. And so you create a space with your expertise, but one that is suited exactly for them. And I think that's a really big...
Yeah, but also, Megan, I think just in talking with Mary, you realize there's a very high competency level, professionalism, knowledge base that I think the ordinary designer can't even touch. Don't y'all feel that?
No, but that, yeah, that goes, I think it goes hand in hand. I think that Mary, I hear you are so confident and rightly so because you have such
it's
a
like
great,
awe-inspiring, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This incredible education, your background, all of that, but on top of it, you don't just walk in and go, I know what I'm doing in here because I know what I'm doing. You go in and you, you know, you're still humble enough to sit down and say, I need to hear from you how you're going to live in this space because, you know, when I walk away, you're going to be the ones living in it, which think is huge.
Interestingly enough, I think that, you know, when most of us talk about design, we're talking a lot about, we use the word creativity a lot. And I think that oftentimes people who come to designers have not such confidence in their creativity. And I, as a person, think that we are all very creative. It just, some people haven't had the experience to learn how to see and to know what they really want. And that's really part of my job too. I really love to help people get to a place where they're really confident in what they want.
I was looking at the, we had been sent this montage of, a bunch of your covers. And the thing I really notice is, you know, there's just a fresh, timeless quality, you know, a lot of youthful. Now, it could be because there's a lot of punches of yellow and orange in these particular pictures, which feel very youthful. But I was wondering if you could share with us and our listeners sort of some tips on how to create timeless spaces, because that's what these sort of all speak to, is a real timeless quality.
Well, that's a good question. I think that it's certainly something that I strive for. If these spaces are timeless, then I first want to thank you for that remarkably kind compliment. What I would say is that my approach is to make sure that the architecture, the interior architecture, is consistent or relates well to the exterior architecture. And I would make sure that those details that are used, and when I say details, I mean the casings, the baseboards, the crowns, that sort of thing, are really consistent, that you didn't choose a Greek revival for an Art Deco house. You know, you make those choices correctly and clearly. And so you have some consistency there. You try and build balance. And then in your choice of furnishings, even if you're going like stark modern, I think that proportion is so very important. I draw everything. Every elevation, every plan is drawn. So I want to make sure that the furniture, the tables, everything, the artwork that goes in, that it goes in and it feels comfortable because it's proportioned to the space. In my interiors, I probably don't use... I use strong color. You can see the greens and the golds and the yellows and blues. But I don't use too many different colors. In other words, you know, I see that color is like a strong horse. You know, it needs to be reined in. Mm-hmm. So I try not to put so much energy into any element that it will sort of unravel or not do well over time. I try and build in the system of proportion and finishes, which is both strong and uncomplicated. And because if the architectural detailing is done right and it's not gimmicky, then it will always wear the test of time, because it doesn't look like something that was supposed to be federal that you could clearly see it was done in the 1950s. You know, proportion is very big for me, in anything, whether it's a rug or whether it's a chair within a room or a column within a room, I'm always sort of looking at whether the proportions work. And this is a sentence. I was going to say it's a quote, but except I think I wrote it. But if proportion represents the good manners of a room, color may well be the measure of its beauty. And so in terms of that timelessness, I think, time. Time goes by, you think of things not looking so well because they age and they're boring. But if you have a certain classicism, which is sort of vigorous and strong and true, it remains. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that, for me, one of the ways to achieve, you know, timelessness is to make sure that you're very careful in the backgrounds, because the foregrounds can be a little sassier, they can be a little newer, can be a little fresher, a little bit more idiosyncratic. But to give them that true timeless look, it's really the architectural detailing and the finishes, I think, that are going to hold it together. And then don't use anything that's just so of the moment that it's trendy. I try not to do that.
Well, that's where all these antiques, and also you tend to use, I mean, there's not a cluttered look to your design. You use overscaled accessories, like one, mm-hmm. you know, prominent accessory. But I think all the antiques, nothing ages when you use an antique, you know, it just remains current always, or timeless.
Yeah, and by giving it a fresher look, like you said, making it a little sassier, by, you know, bringing in some really just yummy color, just, you know, I think is what keeps it from feeling dusty and old.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, in one of my houses, I had recamiers, and, you know, they were upholstered in yellow velvet. And then my Great Danes used to use them as day beds.
Lucky Great Danes.
But I mean, it is that punch. It's the unexpected. It's what makes it memorable. Because if we all do things just by the numbers and in the box, they're going to be, you know, not interesting. I think if you take something that's really good, a really good foundation that's classical and architectural, then, wow, you can make it your own. You can, you know, you can, and the reason why you can use evocative, pronounced color is because the background is so well engineered, if you will. You know, it's so sort of strong in and of itself that the addition of color will not be so potent as to, you know, make the underlying thing evaporate. So for me, it's always been a great combination, these strong classical backgrounds, and then have fun, because I don't want them to look like my grandmother's or my great-grandmother's rooms. I want them to look like my rooms or my clients' rooms. And my clients, for the most part, are very smart and have a sense of humor. So, you know, they want to be comfortable and live in their houses and have their kids jump on the furniture. Well, I am thrilled. I thank you so much for including me. I think that when I was growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer, and my father's a lawyer. And I said, do you know, Dad, I think I want to be a lawyer. And he said, no, that's not for you. He said, Mary, you've got to pick something that's going to continue to give you psychic income and keep your attention for the rest of your life. You need to try something else. And I feel so blessed every day. I feel so happy every day because I think I found what I was supposed to do. I found out when I was living in France that I really loved drawing. I loved problem solving. I loved working with people to, you know, to create something that was going to be meaningful for them and to make it beautiful. And, you know, I wanted to have some fun along the way. And then, but another dream is, I've designed 200 pieces of furniture, and I'd really love to have a furniture line. There's so many things that one can do.
Do you think that's going to happen? I mean, because that seems to be where a lot of popular interior designers are trending towards doing their own lines.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Joni. I think that a lot of designers are. And the key is making that match with the right company and making sure that you have the quality control so that the pieces that when they're made over and over and over again will have the same, you know, interest. I'm going to be speaking very soon in the next month up in New York with a licensing agent. So We'll see. I actually did, in the last 2 weeks, I think, get a letter from a showroom in Georgia, in Atlanta, which might be interested in some of the pieces. Hmm. So I think it's a great way to go, because it takes so long sometimes. You know, you can't imagine the amount of time it takes to build one piece. You know, the drawings, the sampling, the prototypes, the fixing the little things that aren't quite right. And so if you can take all that time and amortize it by, you know, making six of them, it makes it less expensive for everybody.
Are you worried about the future of design as far as the availability of, you know, sources through the internet? Or does that affect you at all, or that are not probably your business?
No, actually, you know, I'm not worried about design, and I'm not worried about my future in the design world. I tend to make a lot of the things. I have a very, I clearly use fabrics that you can see, you know, in these projects and on Facebook. But I also do. I make a lot of furniture, and I make a lot of my own patterns. If you were to look at a room that I did, for example, if it had striped window treatments, you know, mm-hmm. I might say, do you know what, guess what? That fabric wasn't striped when I got it. I just wanted to use those specific colors, and I wanted the stripes to start and stop where I wanted them to. So I cause, you know, so I basically had all those stripes sewn together.
Mm-hmm.
I make a lot of things. So, you know, I think that I'm less constrained because I embroider things, I applique things, I cut fabric into other things to make, you know, secondary things. So, you know, if somebody doesn't have the right fabric, well, then I'll kind of sew two things together and make it the right fabric. I think that now is a time when taste is changing. I mean, I think that taste is on the one hand, people are becoming interested in color again, and they're also paring back. So rooms are going to be not so full. They're going to be more personal. And I think that there'll be some, that won't be all of one standard. You know, it's perfectly fine for someone to get a couple of chairs from Pottery Barn and mix that with a lovely sofa from Holly Hunt. So that there's going to be a lot, I think that there are going to be fewer roles, a lot more freedom. And I think that, you know, it's a measure of quality in this new age is the measure of personal expression that can be found that's authentic in any space.
Well, Mary, thank you so much. This has been very educational.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we were joined by interior designer Mary Douglas Drysdale. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon.